Today is the 17th January 1992. Today we will deal with the 7 benefits of mindfulness and meditation, Vipassana meditation. The discourse of the four foundations of mindfulness, Mahasatipatthana Sutra, was expounded by the Lord Buddha about 2573 years ago. So the discourse teaches all the followers of the Buddha how to practice mindfulness and meditation, Vipassana meditation, and very detailed. In the beginning of the discourse, the omniscient Buddha gave a chapter about Odisha, about the 7 benefits of mindfulness meditation. Only after that he continued to expound the 4 foundations of mindfulness. When you practice the mindfulness meditation or Vipassana meditation, you should have some knowledge of the benefits of a mindfulness meditation. But actually, even though you don't have the theoretical knowledge of these benefits, you have had the practical benefits of this mindfulness meditation to a certain extent. So, though you do not have theoretical knowledge of these 7 benefits, you will be able to put your balanced effort in the practice of meditation, because you have had some experience through your mindful awareness of mental and physical phenomena. Based on this unusual experience, of a mental and physical phenomena, you have some inspiration, and also you are encouraged by your own experience and meditation. But it's better for any meditator to have the theoretical knowledge of the benefits as expounded by the Buddha. In the discourse of Mahasatipatthana Sutra, the 4 foundations of mindfulness, The first benefit is yes. Here the Buddha expounded in this way as follows. Ekayano yam bhikkhave mego sattanam visuddhiya soka paridevanam samadaikamaya dukkha domanasanam athangamaya nyayasa adhikamaya nibbanasa sacchikriyaya yadidam cattaro sipathana. Here the Buddha said, one who has developed this mindfulness and meditation, or one who has developed the four foundations of a mindfulness, can attain to these seven benefits. The first one is purification of the being. Sattana, which is Diya in Pali. Sattana means a being. Which is Diya means a purification. So, the first benefit is a purification of a being. That means
one who practices this mindfulness and meditation can be purified, can be fully purified from all mental defilements. That is the first benefit of a mindfulness and meditation.
But in the beginning of the practice, you do not purify yourself from these defilements because
your concentration is not yet, your mind is not yet concentrated to a certain extent.
When you have practiced this mindfulness meditation and three aspects very diligently and honestly, and these are three aspects of sitting, walking, and awareness of the daily activities. Then you are sure to gain some degree of a concentration gradually. After you have practiced about a week, then you gain some degree of a concentration of a mind. When the mind is concentrated on the object of meditation to a certain extent, it's purified from some of our mental defilements. Then you got the purification of the mind. But in these three aspects of a walk, sitting, walking, and awareness of the daily activities, you have to put enough effort and you are practicing all for these three aspects. Especially, you have to put enough effort and awareness of the daily activities, such as rising from the seat, sitting down, turning, bending of the arms, stretching of the arms, taking something or holding something, and so on. In the Mahasatipatthana Sutra, the omniscient Buddha expounded a separate chapter on clear comprehension or awareness of the daily activity. There he teaches us, when you go forward, then you do it mindfully. When you go backward, you do it mindfully. When you stretch out your arms, you do it mindfully. When you bend your arms, you do it mindfully. When you look straight, you do it mindfully. When you look beside, you do it mindfully, and so on. It means that when you go forward, you should be aware of you are walking, you are stepping. When you go backward, you should be aware of you are stepping, or your foot, the movement of your foot. When you stretch out your arms, you should be aware of the movement of the stretching. When you bend it, you should be aware of the movement of bending. When you put it down, you should be aware of the movement of putting down. When you lift it, you should be aware of the movement of lifting, and so on. There, the Buddha said, when you put on your dress, yeah, mainly when the Buddha expounded to this discourse, the audience, mainly bhikkhus, monks. So the Buddha said, address the bhikkhus, 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 and so on. So when he responded to this separate chapter of a clear comprehension, mainly he refers to the bhikkhus, but there are many lay people also, lay chanting, such as Dhamma. Buddha said, when you hold your rope, you do it mindfully. While you are holding your rope, while you are touching, while you are dressing your rope, you should be aware of all the movements and the action involved in the act of holding,
dressing, putting on, putting up, and so on. In this way, for the lay people, whenever you put on your dress, whenever you put on your shoes, whenever you take off your shoes, you must do these things mindfully. You must be aware of the movement and the action involved in the act of putting on the shoe and taking off the shoes. Then the Buddha said, when you answer the call of nature, or when you go to toilet, and answer the call of nature, you should be mindful of whatever you are doing in the toilet and the bathroom. So, why does the Buddha teach us to be mindful of what we are doing, even in the toilet and the bathroom? We should consider it, because he is compassionate, very much kind to us. So he takes much trouble to teach us to be mindful of whatever you are doing in more and more detail, so that we can have continuity of mindfulness for the whole day, and deeper concentration, and clearer insight, which penetrates into the true nature of a mental and physical phenomena. That's what the Buddha that's what the Buddha's purpose when he teaches us to be mindful of these things in the bathroom, even in toilet. Then I want to ask you, do you follow what the Buddha teaches you to do in the toilet and in the kitchen, in the bathroom? You follow? Yes? Then you are savakas. You are savakas. Savaka is a Pali. Do you know the meaning of the word savaka? No. Savaka. The word savaka, its a root is a su. Ka is a suffix. So the root su means to listen to or to obey. Suffikas means one who does something. When the two words are compounded, it becomes a savaka. Soup changes into sawa. Then sawa is a combined cut savaka. It means that one who listens to the teaching of the Buddha, or one who listens to what the Buddha teaches him. In another word, one who obeys what he is told by the Buddha to do. That's a savaka. You follow? Then if you follow the teaching of the Buddha in more and more detail as much as possible, and even toilet and the bathroom, you can be savaka. You can be savaka. Good savaka or bad savaka? Good savaka or bad savaka? Good. If you try to be mindful of whatever, to be mindful of all mental, all daily activities as much as possible. You are good Savakar. Then we can say, roughly we can translate Savaka into followers. Could we do? Yes. The followers of the Buddha. He, one who follows the path on which the Buddha walked. One who follows the path on which the Buddha walked. Which path? Noble, no? Eightfold path. The middle path, the middle way. So, you are good Savaka, good followers of the Buddha, because you try to be mindful of all actions and movements involved in the act of answering call of nature, even in the bathroom and toilet too. Good Savaka. Is there anyone who is a better Savaka? Do you have among them better Savakas? You may say, we don't have better Savaka among us, but we have the best Savakas. Yes. So, when you lay emphasis on awareness about all daily activities, and more detailed, it's sure for your concentration to be deeply concentrated, your mind, not your mind, to be deeply concentrated on each object of meditation. Why the concentration becomes deeper and deeper, then the mind is purified. Only at that stage of meditational experience, you can purify yourself from some of the mental defilements. Is it right? Yes, not in the beginning of the practice. That's why the Buddha said, one of the benefit of mindfulness and meditation is the purification of beings. It means one practices of mindfulness and meditation is purified from mental defilements. Stage by stage. But in final stage of enlightenment, you will be fully purified of all these mental defilements. Then you have got rid of suffering, dukkha. Then you have been liberated from what? From the cycle of suffering. From the cycle of suffering. Yes. As long as you are not yet fully purified from these defilements, you cannot expect any liberation. Yes. So, when you practice this mindfulness and meditation, as you are taught by the omniscient Buddha, then gradually you are concentrated, your mind becomes concentrated step by step. Then the mind purified gradually. Yeah, gradually means what do you mean by the word gradually? Sluggishly. Gradually means sluggishly or like a snail. Like a snail. When your effort is slackening, then you are like a snail. Slackening is very near to snail. No? So when your effort is slackening, then you are like a snail. Then when you are like snail, your progress is sluggish. Yes, this is the first benefit of the seven ones. But you see, yeah, I want to tell you the three type of removal of mental defilements. The first one is we call it the Dingapahana. The Dingapahana. It means most of Buddhist scholars take it to be momentary removal, the Dingapahana. Actually, it's not momentary removal, it's a partial removal. Partial removal of defilements. That's it, the Dingapahana. To be sure, what do you mean by partial removal? How do you understand it? Yes. You can remove some mental defilements, but not all. Some of mental defilement or some degree of mental defilement is removed. Then it's called partial removal. See, when you have $100, there, one of the thief came to your room and steal 20 chats. $20. Huh? It's a full removal or partial removal. What's there? Partial removal. Because you have $80 left. Partial removal. So, if your mind is well concentrated on the object of meditation and the insight becomes penetrating, sharp, at that time also you are purified from some of a mental defilement, but temporarily. When, say, you see a rose, then you like it or you dislike it? You love, you are attached to it. Then the Buddha said, when you see something, you should be aware of it. You should be mindful of what you see. You should be mindful of what you hear. You should be mindful of what you smell. You should be mindful of what you taste. You should be mindful of what you touch. You should be mindful of what you think about. Then when you see a rose flower, what should you do? Yes, you pick it up. You know that hound. Seeing. Constantly and attentively, you know, seeing. When you note seeing, it seems that the two processes of the consciousness of seeing and also noting mind takes place at the same moment. We think actually it's not so. So then there's a consciousness of seeing, and there's a consciousness of the process of a noting mind. Then, if we do not note seeing, we will see it very well. Then we will see the color, the form of the rose, and the texture of the palette, and so on. Then, the more we know its quality, what will it do? Without considering anything, we rest our hand and pick it up. Then, what did happen? The thorn appears. The first trouble, the first suffering we have because of your attachment to it. We are attached to it. Then, why are we attached to it? Because we know the quality of the rose more and more distinctly. Then if we note seeing, the consciousness of seeing couldn't see where the rose, because the noting mind disturbed it, knocking at the consciousness of seeing. So it can't see the object very well. Then when the noting mind becomes more and more powerful, then the seeing mind becomes weak and weak. Then the quality of a seeing becomes weak, so it is blurred. Then even you don't know later on, you don't know it's a rose. What you are knowing is just the visible object, that's all. The visible object. If you do not believe in this aspect of a meditation, you should try. When you hear some sound, sweet sound, it's the more evident not to have any attachment to it. Now he is seeing, when the mind couldn't see the rose very well, it doesn't know its quality. Even
it doesn't know it's that this is the rose. What does it know to the visible, one of the visible objects so? Then could we have attachment to it? No attachment. Why? Because of noting. Because of noting. Then, at the moment, our noting becomes powerful and attentive. Then we do not see the object, the rose, as the rose. We do not, though we don't have any desire to get it. We don't have any attachment to get it. Then that attachment, desire, or any other mental defilement has been purified in that, at that moment. Do you agree with me? Why? Because we do not know the quality of the rose very well. Why we are not able to know its quality of its quality? Because our seeing, the consciousness of our seeing, is disturbed or get annoyed or breaks, is broken by the noting mind. So it doesn't see the object very well. Then it cannot differentiate between the desirable or undesirable of the object. What it sees is just visible object. Then, in this respect, the Buddha said, when you see something, your mind should see what is seen. That's all. When you see something, your mind should see what is seen, not beyond that. Then, did you understand this one? Dete data madam bhavisati in Pali. Dete data madam bhavisati in Pali. And the among those who learned the Buddhist scriptures, who are fully versed in the Buddhist scriptures, this Dittidhammada, this passage is very famous among the Buddhist scholars. But they do not realize what it means. But for a meditator, it's not difficult to realize the sense of what the Buddha said in this passage. When you see something, your mind see what is seen. That's all. Then it just stops seeing. It hasn't any judgment. The mind doesn't judge the quality of the object. Because it is the capacity to judge the object becomes weak. Why? Because of a noting mind. Then when you want to follow what the Buddha said, when you see something, your mind should see what's seen. What is seen? Then what should you do? Note, mindful of it. Then here, what I want to say is, at the moment we are able to be mindful of the consciousness of seeing very well, then we don't have any attachment, desire, craving, hatred, aversion, ignorance, conceit, and so on about this object. But when we get tired to observe it, to note it, then we do not note, we are not mindful of, then we see it. And when we see, the quality of the rose becomes more and more evident, more and more clear, then the mind knows the quality, very good this rose, and very good scent, and so on. So you are attached to it. Then attachment, defilement comes in. Why? Because you are not observing it. Because you are not noting it. Because you are not mindful of it. There, what does it mean? When you do not observe, when you are not mindful of the consciousness of seeing, there will arise any mental defilement, either desire, attachment, craving, or aversion, or anger, and so on. Because you are mindful of the consciousness of seeing, then the mind doesn't see it very well. It can't differentiate between the good or bad of the good quality or bad quality of the rose. Then what do the mind does, the mind see? What is it seeing? That's all. It means it sees just a visible object. It doesn't go farther. Then you don't have mental defilement at that moment. So you are purified from mental defilement, which may come into your mind, say, when you are not mindful of it. Those are desire or craving, attachment, anger or aversion. Then mindfulness destroys some qualities of desire, craving, hatred, anger. But there are a great deal of qualities of this mental defilement which has not been destroyed by mindfulness. You understand? It means a partial removal of a defilement by mindfulness meditation. That we call here the Dinga Pahana in Pali. It's difficult to grasp this sense of the Dinga, the meaning of this the word Dinga Pahana. Even for Buddhist monks, even learned monks, if they do not practice meditation, if they do not have any experience of meditation, so they translate this one, Dinga Pahana, as momentary removal. It's a momentary removal. It's a partial removal. The commentary defined this word in a very definite way. Then another one is a temporary removal. Temporary removal is Vikambana Pahana in Pali. Vikambana Pahana. temporary removal. It's easy to understand this one. This temporary, the meaning of this temporary removal. When your mind is well concentrated on each object of meditation, the mind doesn't go very often. It may go out occasionally, but you know it when you note it. The mind comes to the object and concentrate. But the concentration is not deep enough. The insight that arises together with the concentrated mind is not penetrating enough. So it can't realize any mental process or physical process. But because the mind is well concentrated on the object of a meditation, it's a purifying from defilement. None of the defilement can come in into the mind because it's totally absorbed into the object of meditation. Not totally. It's absorbed into the object of meditation. Then it's purifying from defilement. But when a meditator wants to come in meditation hall, then he opens the door very roughly, and then he comes in and he shuts up the door very roughly, then there are noises. That noises disturbs your concentration, breaks the concentration. When your concentration is broken, then mental defilement coming. That is, it means as long as your mind is concentrated on the object of meditation, you are purified temporarily. When the concentration is broken, then the mind defilement is coming. That's a temporarily removal, temporary removal, vikamana pahana. Then you can say temporarily, yes, a purification. Then the third one, actually, this removal is of five kinds. I choose only three, so that I can make you understand. Then, the third one is total removal. How do you understand this part? Because I want to be sure, so that's why I ask this question. Total removal. All mental defilements is fully destroyed, then purified. That's the total removal. The all mental defilement can be totally destroyed only by path knowledge, magnana, in Pali. Path knowledge. There are four kinds of path knowledge. Higher one after another. Path knowledge here means enlightenment. Enlightenment. And according to Buddhism, there are four stages of enlightenment. The first stage of enlightenment is known as Sotapatthimagga Jnana. To make it easy, then the first stage of enlightenment is a sotapatti. That's all. Sotapatti. Then the second stage is a sakadagami. Sakadagami. The third stage is a anagami. The fourth stage is a arahata. Sotapatti means it's translated into supreme enterer. Supreme enterer. That's a literary translation. Supreme enterer. Here, supreme means the Noble Eightfold Path. Enterer means one who has attained the first stage of enlightenment. He enters into the path knowledge or the first stage of enlightenment. So it's called the supreme enterer. Then the second stage is sakadagami. Here saka means once. Dagami means the returner. Sakadagami means once returner. That means one who has attained the second stage of enlightenment. After his death, he will go up the higher stages of celestial realm. Deva Loka, we call it the Brahma Loka, the realm of devas, deities, the realm of Brahma. But he may return to this earth, this sensual the realm of our sensual desire, only once. He may return to the realm of this sensual desire only once. But after he has returned here, he will attain the fourth path. He will attain the third path and the fourth path. Then he has totally purified all defilement. He doesn't return again here. He has gone. This is Karagami, but it's not of no use to know the meaning of this, the word, the terms. But for your theoretical knowledge, I explain you. Then the third one is anagami. Anagami means non-returner. When he has attained the third stage of enlightenment, the third part knowledge, after his death, he may be reborn in the higher world of a Brahma or Deva, Brahma. But he never returns to this world of sensual pleasure. So he is called non-returner. One who has attained the third stage of enlightenment. It's called anagami, which is translated into non-returner. Then the fourth one called arhata. Arhata here means one who has completely destroyed all defilements. That's arhata. So he is worthy of a full honor. He is worthy of a full honor. That's the fourth one. Yes. The all defilements are uprooted by these four stages of enlightenment. In other words, these are four stages of enlightenment totally destroys all the qualities of each of mental defilements. But the first stage of enlightenment can destroy some of defilement. Then the second stage is some, the third stage is some, then the fourth stage destroys all mental defilements. But when the first stage of enlightenment destroys these defilements, it destroys say Sakaya deity Vichikeja, the idea of a personality or the wrong view of a personality, and also skeptical doubt. These two defilements totally destroyed by the first stage of enlightenment. So one who has attained the first stage of enlightenment has no Sakaya deity Vichikeccha at all. He has no idea of a personality, individuality, self or soul. He has no doubt about triple gems at all, because these two kinds of defilement has been uprooted by the the first stage of enlightenment. Not the some quality of these two defilements is destroyed, but all qualities or full qualities of these mental defilements has been uprooted by the insight, the first stage of enlightenment. So that removal is called a total removal. We call it Samuccheda Pahana in Pali. It's a total removal of all the removal of defilements. You know, when you see the rose, when you are mindful of the seeing of the consciousness of the seeing, like seeing, then you don't have any desire, attachment, aversion, anger. But when you are not mindful of it, then you see the rose very well, and there arises a desire. But at the moment you are mindful of the seeing, the consciousness of seeing, you have removed some qualities of desire, craving, anger, aversion, and so on. Because you do not realize, you do not see, you do not differentiate between good quality of the rose. What you are seeing is you see it as the visible object. Then if you do not mindful of, or you do not note it, there may be attachment, desire, or aversion coming to your mind. Because now you are mindful of, they doesn't come into the mind. Because they the mind doesn't know the quality of the rose. What does know is just a visible object. What is seen? Just a visible object. So there you remove the partial quality of these defilements. But there are a great deal of quality of the Zeta's development left undestroyed by this knowledge. So that's why we call it partial removal of a defilement. Then here, actually, I do not intend to go into this word. What I want to explain is only the seven benefits of a mindfulness. So, when does stray? Go stray. What can I do? Just stop when time's up. When time's up, that's all. So, purification of a mind can be so at the three stages. The first one is partial purification. The second one is temporary purification. The third one is total purification. Then, what kind of a purification do you want to have? Let me ask you. Total purification you want. Then you will stay here at least 1 year. Continue to practice your meditation intensively and as Alfred said, strenuously. Yes. If you practice this mindfulness meditation intensively and also without wasting your valuable time, you follow? And you waste your time sometimes, taking rest, sleeping, and so on. Yes. We in our Chami Yeda Meditation Center, the yogi said to get up at 3:30. From 3:30 to 10 o'clock at night, without break. They do not take rest, say about 30 minutes or 1 hour. They may take about 50 minutes after lunch. Only that, but we do not allow them to take rest. Then, after that, they continue their practice for the whole day by being more and more aware of more daily activities and more detail. Some of the meditators practice until 11, 12, 1 in the morning, 2. Then they had to get up at 3:30. They do not waste their time. Then, comparatively, you are? So, if you practice intensively without wasting your time, you are sure to purify your self, a total purification you attain in 3 months' time.